Okay. So this is work that I did with a student of mine, Mark Khoury. Mark's an undergraduate. He's actually a junior this year at Ohio State. He was supposed to present this paper. Due to some unfortunate circumstances, he wasn't able to make it, so I'm giving the presentation today. It's on the fractal dimension, and quick overview. I'm going to give a definition of the fractal dimension, and then we're going to explore some of the aspects of that definition. So we can compute a fractal dimension for each scalar value, for each ISO value, and from that we get a contour spectrum of the fractal dimension. We'll take a look at that and try to see, understand what that means, what the implications are. We'll look at the relationship between noise and the fractal dimension. We'll look at isosurface growth rates. And then if there's some time, we'll talk about predicting the fractal dimension as a function of noise. So what is the fractal dimension? If you look at standard math text, well, math textbooks dealing with fractility, they'll tell you there is no definition of the fractal dimension. There are at least 2 to 3 dozen different definitions, and they're not all compatible. We're going to give one definition, which is a mathematical one, but intuitively, what we're trying to think of as the fractal dimension is we want to measure the ratio of the surface complexity to grid resolution growth. So as the grid resolution increases, the surface complexity increases, and we want to look at that ratio. There is some previous reference to fractal dimension in the literature. Pekar et al. Talked about a way to measure the fractal dimension. They actually didn't give a precise definition of what they meant by the fractal dimension, but this was only a small part, one paragraph in a much larger paper. What they suggested was you want to subsample the grid at different resolutions. You want to measure an approximation to the isosurface area and map the log of that as a function of grid size. Then the fractal dimension is the slope of that fitting line. Our definition of the fractal dimension is based on a classical mathematical definition of something called the fractal box counting dimension. So take X, which is a set of points, and it's not necessarily a surface, it's any set of points, and you place a grid on top of X, a regular grid, and now count the number of intersected cubes in that grid. Okay? If you do that, and you compare that with the length of the cube edge, well, actually you take log of the number of intersected cubes over log of 1 over the length of the cube edge, you get some ratio between the number of intersected cubes and the grid size. Now you do that for increasing grids for smaller and smaller delta, and you take the limit as delta goes to 0, and that's known as the fractal box counting dimension of the set X. The problem with using this definition, of course, we're taking a limit as delta goes to 0. We need an infinite series of scalar data sets to do this, and we don't have an infinite set. Actually, we don't typically only have one. We have a single scalar data set. So what you want to do is subsample that data set. Take that data set and subsample it. And we could have done what Pekar et al. Did, subsample at different rates and take the slope, but instead we did something simpler. We just subsampled it once. So we take the full resolution data set, we take the subsampled data set, we compute the number of intersected cubes in the full resolution, number of cubes in the subsampled, we take the ratio and we take the log to the base 2. And that gives us what we define as the fractal box span dimension of this scalar data set. So for instance, if you take a point cloud, which generates a circle in the plane, you take a 16 by 16 resolution grid, and you count the number of intersected cubes, you will get 52 intersected cubes. Now you go to lower resolution, you get 28 intersected cubes, and you apply our formula for the fractal dimension, log 2 over 52 divided by 28, and you get 0.9, which is approximately 1, which is what you'd expect for a circle. If you add some noise to your data set, you get a noisy circle, and now in your full resolution grid, you get 74 intersected cubes. At your lower resolution, you get 28 intersected, same as original, and now you take log of 74 over 28, and you get 1.4, which is significantly greater than 1. Some properties of this definition of the fractal box span dimension. First of all, it uses only 2 grids, so you're only looking and measuring 2 grids. It's a precise formula. So there's no approximation here. It's an exact formula. For each grid, for each scalar data set, you have a precise value, which is the fractal box span dimension. That value may or may not be significant. That's another issue, but it is precise. on the formula uses the number of intersected cubes, not isosurface area or not number of triangles, and that means it's independent of the isosurfacing algorithm. So you don't have to worry about using marching cubes or the trilinear interpolant. We're just counting the number of intersected cubes. There's no need to compute the isosurface. You're just counting intersected cubes. And thus, it's easily computed and plotted. And so for each scalar value, you can compute and plot the fractal box span dimension. And if you do that, you get the contour spectrum of the fractal dimension. So the contour spectrum was an idea proposed by Bajaj, Pascucci, and Shikori. It's the idea of plotting scalar frequencies, isosurface areas, gradients as a function of scalar values. And that gives you interesting or important information about the scalar data set. In particular, it suggests interesting or important scalar values, which could be iso values. So we can do the contour spectrum of the fractal dimension. On the bottom, the x-axis is the iso value, and the left is the fractal dimension. We're plotting the fractal dimension. And here we've chosen three iso values to look at. We have iso value 60, which has a low fractal dimension, and that corresponds to the skin of the visible male. We have iso value 72, again a low fractal dimension, which corresponds to the skeleton. And we have iso value 68, high fractal dimension, and notice that's a very noisy isosurface. Some other benchmark data sets, lobster. So iso value 29, nice clean isosurface. Iso value 12, high fractal dimension, noisy isosurface. The skull data set, iso value 1200, clean skull, iso value 1062, high fractal dimension, and noisy data set. We can, for each data set, we can compute the fractal dimension for each iso value and average over the iso values. And then we take a histogram of those fractal, or those average fractal dimensions, and we get the following histogram, which is concentrated around 2.2. If we compute the average here, the average is 2.25. To look a little bit closer at the fractal dimension, I want to look at a very specific and seemingly odd case. Let's assume we have a constant scalar field. Okay, so if we sample the scalar field, let's say iso at value 5, scalar field is f of x equals 5. We always get 5 as our scalar grid, no matter what resolution we're looking at. This f inverse of 5 represents the entire region covered by the grid. It represents an area, and that area has dimension 2. If we apply the mathematical fractal box counting dimension on f inverse 5, we're also going to get 2. Now, if we try to apply our definition of the fractal isosurface dimension, something odd happens here. Notice if we apply marching cubes to this with iso value 5, we actually don't get any iso contour. It doesn't draw anything. We can modify our definition so that it actually does give us something close to 2, which is what we'd expect. But instead of talking about that, we'll look at what happens if we perturb this, add a little bit of noise. So we're going to throw in a little bit of noise into this data set, and now look at the fractal box span dimension, that isosurface fractal dimension. Okay? And the formula is the log of the number of intersected cubes at the full resolution grid over the number of intersected cubes at the low resolution grid. And we notice here that now that we've thrown in noise, our iso contour intersects almost all the squares in the grid. We intersect 31 squares on the left, and at the low resolution, we intersect all the squares, 8, and so we get a fractal dimension of log base 2 of 31 over 8, or 1.95, which is approximately 2. So we're getting almost a fractal dimension of 2. If this were in 3 dimensions, we'd be getting fractal dimension very close to 3. Thing to notice here is noise affects the fractal dimension, and it affects the fractal dimension in areas where the gradient is very low. So if we go back and look at the visible male data set, at iso values 68 and at iso values 60 and 72, we get a very low fractal dimension because there's high gradient there. Versus iso value 68, we get a high fractal dimension. There's lots of noise there, and that noise is affecting a region which has very low gradient. It's really representing a region between the skin and the skull. The upshot is the fractal dimension is really determined by a number of things. One is determined by the intrinsic fractal dimension of the level set, what fractal dimension is really there, but it's also determined by noise. If we add noise to the data set, and there's noise in every data set, that affects the fractal dimension too. And it's not just the noise, it's the interplay of the noise and the gradient. Right? So if you take a high gradient region, you add noise to that, that's going to move the isosurface vertices a bit, but it's not going to really affect the basic topology of the isosurface, the basic structure there. Whereas if you have a very low gradient region, you add noise to that, and that will make tremendous difference to the structure of the isosurface. Okay. So actually, that brings up the question, if we look at benchmark data sets and we measure that fractal dimension, are we measuring the intrinsic fractal dimension, or are we measuring noise in the data set? What part of the fractal dimension is due to noise, and what part is due to the intrinsic fractal dimension of the level set? And there was work on adding noise to data sets. So Scheidegger et al. Took data, the Marchner lobe data set, the sphere data set, and added noise to it, and they noticed that the isosurface complexity went up with noise. But that doesn't really tell you how much noise is intrinsic to these data sets. It doesn't answer the question. To answer the question, you need some measure of how much noise is in these data sets. And you want to measure a certain type of noise, the noise that corresponds to noise in the isosurface. And the way we suggested doing that is to measure topological noise by measuring the number of connected components in these data sets. So the assumption here is that the underlying surface that we're interested in has just a couple of connected components, 5, 10, or 50. When you get into the hundreds or thousands of connected components, that really represents noise in the data set. And we can measure the number of connected components for each ISO value and plot that on the contour spectrum below. And notice there are two peaks, one at ISO value 400 and one at ISO value 850. And those two peaks correspond to very noisy isosurfaces. So now if we compute the contour spectrum of the noise, the number of connected components, and the contour spectrum of the fractal dimension, note that these visually correspond pretty well. Since we've got values for each scalar value, we can correlate these and measure the correlation. And we plot that in a histogram, and we get an average correlation of 0.6, with the correlation very concentrated around 0.6. So what this tells us is that at least part of the fractal dimension is due to noise in the data set. Doesn't answer the question whether it's all due to noise, but at least part of it, or at least a high part of it, is due to noise. Want to switch to a slightly different question. Consider a sequence of grids with increasing resolution, so n1, n2, n3, n4, as n goes up to infinity. How does the isosurface complexity for an isovalue sigma grow as ni grows? Or another way of asking this is, if I tell you the grid size, can you tell me what the expected complexity of the isosurface is going to be? Either the number of cubes intersected by the isosurface or the number of triangles in the isosurface. And there's previous work on that done by Carr et al. In 2006, and then that work was looked at again by Scheidegger et al. In 2008. What does this have to do with fractal dimension? Well, this is exactly what we're measuring by fractal dimension. Because we have the following very simple theorem. If the fractal dimension is 3 kappa, the number of intersected cubes grows as theta n kappa. So the fractal dimension is directly related to the number of intersected cubes, which is one measure of the complexity. If you're measuring one, you're measuring the other. I'll compare our results to the previous work, but first I want to talk about the difference between Carr et al. And Scheidegger et al. So for the purposes of what we're interested in, the difference between these two papers is how they average the complexity over scalar values. They both measure complexity for each data set over different scalar values, and what Carr et al. Does is they average that uniformly over all the scalar values, and they get a growth rate in the complexity of theta n to the 0.82. Scheidegger et al., for theoretic reasons, instead weight those scalar values by frequency, and they get a much higher growth rate of theta n to the 0.96. Look a little bit more carefully about these two ways of averaging. So if you average over uniformly over scalar values, consider the following case. Here's an example where you have really two regions, one on the left and one on the right, and it's fairly uniform within the two regions. The gradient varies from one to 8 in the left region, the same in the right region. But between those two regions, there's a high differential of the gradient. If you average uniformly over the scalar values, you're going to weight the isovalues in the range 10 to 50 very highly. And those isovalues all correspond to a single iso contour, which isn't changing much. So you're really weighting highly this region right here, between the left and the right. On the other hand, if you weight the scalar values by frequency, consider the following example, where you have a region on the left which is really constant, and a region on the right which is also constant, and there's a big gap between them. If you do a large weighting of scalar values by frequency, then you're going to measure the fractal dimension, well, you're going to measure highly the scalar value at 5, and put a lot of weight on the scalar value at 55, and pretty much ignore everything else. But the scalar value at 5 and 55, well, if you add a little bit of noise, you're going to get a fractal dimension of 2. I mean, what that really tells you, what you're going to get out of this, is that these data sets have regions which are constant area, which maybe is what you want to know. But if you're interested in the fractal dimension of isosurfaces, I mean, it really tells you that you shouldn't be modeling this as isosurfaces. These are really interval volumes. So what we did is measure these, or do these weighting, by averaging uniformly. We compared our result with Carr et al. Carr et al. Got a single number for each data set. They plotted that as a function of the size of the data set and then fit a line. And they got an average isosurface growth rate of n to the 0.82. If we compare that to our results, so notice on the left of this plot, we've got the growth rate going from n to the 0.6 to n, or the fractal dimension from essentially 2 to 3. And those things are the same thing. It's really measuring the same values. It's just a different way of looking at the same values. We looked at all the data sets. We had 62 data sets. And we got a fractal dimension of approximately 2.2. And that corresponds to a growth rate of n to the 0.74 compared with n to the 0.82 of Carr et al. Following Carr et al., we also broke our data sets into medical, measured, and synthetic data sets, into three categories. And notice, when we did that, the fractal dimension and growth rate didn't change that much, whereas for Carr et al., you sort of got different numbers all over the place. I should say, Carr et al. Were actually looking at 90 data sets. We were looking at a subsample of those 90 data sets. Some of those data sets that Carr et al. Had were duplicates, and we eliminated some duplicates. Some of those were very simple data sets, point clouds, and we didn't think it was worth measuring those or putting those in our data. So we got a difference. Why the difference? Well, note Carr et al. Are comparing different data sets to each other, whereas we're comparing each data set to itself. We're comparing high resolution or full resolution data sets to a subsample data set. Also, within each category of data sets, you get a very small sample size. Okay, so when you do linear regression, you really have a problem with such a small sample size. And finally, we get, well, Carr et al. Has one sample per data set. We get one sample for each ISO value, so hundreds of sample values per data set. Finally, I want to talk about predicting the fractal dimension as a function of noise. So it's the following question. We take an isosurface, a smooth isosurface with fractal dimension near 2. We want to know, can we predict a fractal dimension as a function of noise? So if we add noise to this isosurface, can we predict what the fractal dimension is going to be? And for this, we need to look at a slightly different definition of fractal dimension. Instead of using the box span dimension, we're going to use the edge span dimension. And the difference is, instead of counting the number of intersected edges, we're going to count the number of intersected cubes. Okay. The reason we do this is it's easier to compute the probabilities with edges than with cubes. Okay. These things are similar. They give about the same results, but they're not quite the same. So this is a plot of adding noise to a sphere data set, and as you can notice, the plots of the fractal box span dimension versus edge span dimension, they follow similarly the same contour, but they're not quite the same. We need some assumptions about our noise distribution, so we assumed for simplicity that the noise we added was uniform from negative mu to mu. Assumptions about noise distribution are not enough. Right? Fractal dimension depends upon the interplay between the noise and the gradient. So we need some assumptions about the gradient distribution also. So we assume that the gradients vary uniformly over a unit sphere, and that the gradient magnitude was constant. And then we derived a formula for the fractal dimension. What we did was create a noisy grid by adding uniform noise to the scalar grid, compute the probability that an edge is intersected by the isosurface in the noisy grid, and that's a closed probability, sum the probability across all edges to compute the expected number of intersected edges, and then compute the expected fractal dimension from the expected number of intersected edges in the full and subsampled grid. And when you do that, you get a formula. So here, gamma is the constant gradient magnitude in the data set. R is the noise, or the ratio of the noise to gamma. So the noise is uniform in the range negative R gamma to R gamma. And F of R is the fractal dimension. And we get the following formula. It's broken into three parts, where R is less than 1/2, between 1/2 and 1, and greater than 1. Okay. The reason for three parts is you have to consider the case where R, well, where noise is greater than the constant gradient magnitude, separately from the case where R is left. When you do that, you get this nice curve here, which represents the fractal dimension as a function of noise. We validated this by taking the synthetic data, taking a point cloud, well, multiple points, distance to multiple points, and that also distance to a circle, which gave you a torus. Those essentially followed our assumption about the gradient, and then we added noise to that. And we computed the fractal dimension on those two data sets and plotted that. As you can see, the plot's pretty close. I don't have time to talk about the experiment with adding noise to real data, so I just want to move on to some open problems. This is the main open problem, I think, is the following. So we said fractal dimension in benchmark data sets is determined both by some intrinsic fractal dimension and by noise and the gradient, the interplay of noise and the gradient. The question is, well, how much is that interplay? Or is it all noise? Or does some isosurfaces have some intrinsic fractal dimension which isn't due to noise? Another way of asking that is the isosurfic fractal dimension, other than 2 or 3, all caused by the noise? We have a correlation coefficient of 0.6. That's not, well, it's close, but it's not, you know, 1 or close to 1. Will the correlation increase maybe if we use local measures of noise and fractal dimension? And finally, in our fractal formula assumptions, we made some assumptions both about the noise and the gradients. We assume uniform noise from negative mu to mu. That's not a realistic assumption. You really want to look at Gaussian or some other noise models. We assume the gradients vary uniformly over the unit sphere. What's a more realistic gradient distribution? And we computed the fractal dimension based on edges, not boxes. What about the box span dimension? And finally, there's code to compute these box and edge span dimensions available at Ohio State, graphics/isotable. Thank you.
Okay, time for questions. If you have a question, come up here, please. Hamish, of course, you have to ask a question.
What a surprise.
It goes without saying that I like the work. Two things, and the first one is going to come across as a trifle pedantic. I noticed that in your reference to the 06 paper, you're listing the names as Carr, Brian, and Barry. There's an error in the online versions which lists Brian as the surname, and the students' names are actually Brian Duffy and Barry Denby.
I apologize.
You're not the only one who's got the reference incorrect, which is the only reason I'm saying it. It's just to make sure that everybody knows that Brian Duffy gets his credit. So the real question is, since what you're doing is you're computing the fractal dimension for the isosurfaces, and then you're averaging, the gradient-weighted version ought to compute the fractal dimension of the entire data set. And I was wondering if you'd thought about going up to 4 dimensions to do the equivalent computation of the 3 manifold?
No, I haven't. And I'm not sure what we mean now. Let's see. So we look at the 3 manifold.
Which you can view as existing inside
right.
A 4 dimensional tessellation. And therefore, you could compute the fractal dimension of that manifold. And it ought to correlate, I think, with the gradient-weighted average.
Okay. My guess is, I'm going to guess no. And the reason is, so there's this funny interplay. When you add noise to a scalar data set, and you add a little bit of noise, it doesn't necessarily look a whole lot different, right, if you look at just the data set. I mean, from an image processing viewpoint, there isn't, you know, you add a little bit of noise, it doesn't change, you know, if you look at that projected upward, it doesn't really change what it looks like. It could change drastically low what the level set looks like. And there's this interplay between the level set where you're cutting things as opposed to what the image processing people think of in terms of the noise added to a data set. I don't know if that...
Well, in fact, it's an interesting question in that a lot of the time we are looking for surfaces, and therefore it does seem reasonable to look at the fractal dimension of individual surfaces. But for classification purposes, you might actually want to be looking at the fractal dimension of the entire data set. And at that point, the model may matter, whether you're doing it as an average, a weighted average, or whether you're treating it as a manifold.
OK, well, we'll have to talk offline.
Yeah,
and do the experiment.
Yeah, this will be a really short question after Hamish's discussion. The fractal dimension is pretty much defined on regular lattices for the most part. Do you have any insights on how you might apply these heuristics to irregular or unstructured data or particle data?
Short answer, no. I mean, if the unstructured data, I mean, you could do something similar if it was fairly uniform. You can certainly measure the number of intersections at full resolution, lower resolution. You'd have to then specify how you go to lower resolution. So, there's certainly a line that you could follow there, but we didn't follow it through yet. And part of it is this gives a nice, very specific number, whereas once you go to unstructured data, it's not clear how you should subsample and what that number should be. Well, you wouldn't necessarily have to go to a regular grid. You could take irregular grid at different resolutions and do the same kind of counting, number of intersections with the tetrahedra. But the question is, how do you want to go down to that lower resolution irregular grid?
Okay, so we've consumed our time here. Let's thank the speaker again.